Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Lori London reporting. Rescue workers in Northern California are using cadaver-sniffing dogs to search for bodies in the ruins of homes burned to the ground by wildfires. The fires north of San Francisco have killed 31 people since Sunday, while hundreds are missing or unaccounted for, according to Sonoma County Sheriff Robert Giordano.
As of this morning, we have 900 missing persons reports. We have found 437 of them safe, just communication issues. Cell surface still having problems. People have been evacuated from multiple areas. They're just not connecting with their family. So 437 of the 900 are safe. 463 are still outstanding.
22 fires were burning Thursday, with firefighters partially containing just one. More than 75,000 hectares have burned so far, including some of Northern California's world-famous vineyards and wineries. At least 3,500 homes and businesses are destroyed. All that remains of some neighborhoods are a few blackened chimneys and charred trees and burned-out cars. President Donald Trump is lashing out at hurricane-devastated Puerto Rico. He's insisting that federal help will be limited, and he's blaming the U.S. territory for its financial struggles. The broadside comes as the House heads toward passage of a $36.5 billion disaster aid package, including assistance for Puerto Rico. U.S. stock indexes retreated from their record highs on Thursday as retailers and media companies declined and investors shrugged at quarterly reports from a few big banks. You're listening to VOA News. A U.S.-Canadian couple and their three children were apparently still in Pakistan late Thursday, preparing to return to the West after 5 years in Taliban captivity. President Donald Trump praised the release of the family and called the development a positive moment in U.S.-Pakistan relations.
We hope to see this type of cooperation and teamwork in helping secure the release of remaining hostages and in our future joint counterterrorism operations.
Acting on a tip from U.S. intelligence, Pakistani troops rescued U.S. national Caitlin Coleman and her Canadian husband, Joshua Boyle, from the Kuram tribal region near the Afghan border Wednesday. Coleman and Boyle went missing while backpacking in Afghanistan in 2012. The Afghan Taliban later claimed responsibility for kidnapping them. President Trump, frustrated by congressional failures to overhaul national health care policy, signed an executive order Thursday aimed at making lower-cost reduced benefit health insurance more readily accessible for consumers.
It directs the Department of Health and Human Services, the Treasury, and the Department of Labor to take action to increase competition, increase choice, and increase access to lower-priced, high-quality health care options.
Trump staged a White House event with small business owners who could benefit from his order. He said his changes will end the, quote, nightmare of Obamacare, the popular term for the Affordable Care Act that was former President Barack Obama's signature legislative achievement. The Myanmar army chief told the U.S. ambassador that Rohingya Muslims are not native to the country. Andrew Palchevsky has the story.
Myanmar General Min Aung Hlaing apparently did not address accusations of abuses by his men when he met with U.S. Ambassador Scott Marciel, and said the media was complicit in exaggerating the number of refugees fleeing. Thousands of Rohingya left the Rakhine state Thursday, aiming to reach Bangladesh by boat, citing a shortage of food and fears of repression. A Myanmar official said people were leaving, but he dismissed the suggestion hunger and intimidation were factors. The UN High Commissioner for Human Rights has described the government's operations as a textbook example of ethnic cleansing, and said the action appeared to be a cynical ploy to forcibly transfer large numbers of people without the possibility of return. Andrew Palchesky, VOA News.
A top Facebook executive says ads linked to Russia trying to influence the U.S. presidential election should absolutely be released to the public, along with information on whom the ads were targeting. Previously, Facebook declined to make the ads public. While Facebook's chief operating officer, Sheryl Sandberg, now favors the release, she didn't say when the company would do so. I'm Lori
That's
London.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voices of America. I'm James Botte in Washington. Today is Friday, October 13th, and here are some of the stories we're covering. Liberia's Elections Commission announces the first provisional results from Tuesday's presidential elections.
Joseph Yuma Buaka of UP, this is Bomi County, has a total of 33.1%. The CDC of Mr. George Manny Weir, 44.4%.
Jerome Kokoya is chair of the National Elections Commission of Liberia. George Weah's coalition of three political parties is excited about the trend so far of the first provisional results. We'll talk with newspaper publisher Rodney Sie about the first provisional results. And there has been a dramatic drop in the number of migrants crossing the Sahel to Europe.
Last year, the first 6 months, we were estimating 5,000 to 7,000 migrants transiting per week going to Algeria or Libya. Right now, our numbers show that we have 5,500 migrants per month.
Giuseppe Lopretti is the Niger chief of mission for the International Organization for Migration. Congo's Kasai province crisis is improving, but there are still some obstacles. And the Ugandan group embarks on tree planting. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley Sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Liberia's Elections Commission on Thursday released the first provisional results from Tuesday's presidential elections. Although the percentages were small, Senator George Mane Weah of the Three-Party Coalition for Democratic Change, the CDC, took an early lead in 11 of the country's 15 political subdivisions. The announcement came amid complaints of irregularities and one political party threatening legal action. In announcing the results, Elections Commission Chair Jerome Kokoya warned candidates and political parties to desist from announcing their own results.
Joseph Yuma Buaka of UP, this is Bomi County, has a total of 33.1%. Total votes obtained in 2,807 so far. It did represent 32 polling places out of 158 polling places in there. That's 20.25%. The CDC of Mr. George Manny Weir, 44.4%. And that accounts for 3,760 votes. Bong County, there are a total of 502 polling places in this county. 241 of them have reported, and that represents 48.01%. UP of Mr. Joseph Barkai, have a total of 24,367 votes, representing 34.0% of the vote. CDC, 28,233 votes, representing 39.4%. Bapolo County, there's a total of 133 polling places here. 26 of those have reported, and that represents 19.55%. Of that, the UOP obtained a total of 2,768 votes, and that would be 37.4%. The CDC, 3,075 votes, and that represents 41.6%. Would y'all like to clarify that, as we have repeatedly said, only this commission can declare a winner of any public elections. So far, this commission has not, let me repeat, has not declare any winner. As you can see, this is the first time we're just providing provisional report. So the report going around that somebody or some people have already been elected, we are not aware of that. So except you got different commission, but this commission has not declared any winner yet.
Jerome Kokoya is chair of Liberia's Elections Commission. A spokesperson for Senator George Weah's Three-Party Coalition for Democratic Change, the CDC, says supporters are excited about the trend so far of the first provisional results of Tuesday's presidential election, announced Thursday by the National Elections Commission of Liberia. Although the percentages were small, Senator Weah's CDC took an early lead in 11 of the country's 15 political subdivisions. Professor Wilson Tappe is the national campaign manager for Senator Weah's Coalition for Democratic Change. He says compared to the 2011 election, Weah's support is wider and stronger. Professor Tapper says the CDC looks forward to a first-round victory, but that it is also prepared for any second-round challenge.
Citizens are all happy about it because, you know, Jimmy, a significant amount of work has been put into this process. Ambassador Weah and his running mate and every member of the coalition are all happy about it because we look forward to bringing the needed change that our people deserve to improve the situation in which they live. So we are all excited about it. The factions are relatively small to draw any principal conclusion, but those of us working in the war room know that that trend that is emerging will solidify in the days ahead.
As you said, Professor Tapp, the percentages are very small so far. I'm sure you must have followed what happened in 2011. What is different now in terms of these results that are coming in?
2011, the party was in a different time. In fact, it was the Congress for Democratic Change all by itself. So it acted as a political organization all by itself. This time, you have three major political parties assembling on a canopy to form the Coalition for Democratic Change. So the base is wider, it is stronger, and the outreach is even broader than you will have it. Compared to 2011, in 2017, this time around, a significant level of work was done. We reached out, we really campaigned, we took our time.
I saw a video somewhere where partisans of your party have been having rallies. I don't know whether they were doing so in celebration or is there a word caution here?
Oh, yes, you can say that. But let me say this, Jimmy. You are referring to a group of young people who constitute 70% of the population, young people whose lives have been turned upside down by adults who believe that they have no hope. And when you see them hanging on to the person they see as their hope to change their situation for the better, gaining some traction in that direction, you can definitely make excuses for the level of excitement.
Do you look forward to winning it all, or do you look forward to a runoff?
Jimmy, we are in this thing to win. Everything we've done is to win on the first ballot. But we are realistic also. If it doesn't happen that way, we are prepared just as we did in this first round to go. Whatever runoff that is, we'll put everything in it to go there. But we will win.
Professor Tapper, it's so nice to talk with you. We will be following as more results come in the days to come.
Please do. And I can assure you the trend that you are beginning to see will strengthen and get even better. Thank you.
Professor Wilson Tapper is the National Campaign Manager for Senator George Weah's Coalition for Democratic Change. He was speaking with me from the Liberian capital, Monrovia. For analysis of yesterday's first provisional results in Liberia's presidential election, we are joined by Rodney Sie, Managing Editor of Front Page Africa, Liberia's leading online and print news magazine. He says if the trend in yesterday's first preliminary results continues, Senator George Weah could win the elections in the first round.
Well, James, as you know, the moment leading to that results announcement, there were a lot of fake news flooding the internet. I'm sure you're aware of Ambassador Weah's former coach, Arsene Wenger in Arsenal, congratulated him also for his victory. So there were a lot of people, a lot of tension. So when the commissioners announced the results on Thursday, it kind of calmed the nerves of a lot of people. But it showed a lot of strong numbers for the Coalition for Democratic Change headed by George Manuel Weah, on the distant second for the incumbent Vice President Joseph Boakai.
Rodney, you followed the 2005 and 2011 elections. What is different in these results compared to, let's say, 2011?
Well, I think the difference this time around is that we have started the CDC seem to be much stronger in virtually all the counties, with the exception of Nimba, where Prince Johnson, the former warlord that the INPF is from, and Lofa County, Mr. Boakai's hometown. Weah apparently is on his way to victory in most of those counties. So that's the difference this time around. And unless the numbers change as the percentage goes up, it's likely that there will be a second round. But as the numbers stand now, it's possible that this could be a first-round victory for Weah.
I'm looking at the very small results that have come in, and I'm comparing Charles Brumsken of the Liberty Party and Alexander Cummins of the Alternative Congress Party. It seems to me they both are juggling. Either someone is coming third or someone is coming fourth. What do you see?
Yeah, everybody is noticing that Mr. Cummins is doing pretty well. He's running third in most of the precincts. and it looks like he might finish third in this election. His numbers in Monserrato looks impressive. His numbers in Grand Cru is not heavy, but it looks also impressive. So it seems like the Liberty Party may have lost some steam this election compared to last time around. But the numbers are still early. We'll see how it plays out tomorrow and the day after.
There have been some reports about irregularities. How serious are these reports or these rumors?
There are a couple of reports about arrests at certain precincts where people were arrested for pre-marking ballots. So there are concerns, although the international observers are saying that there were a lot of lapses, but it doesn't reach a level where it will change the results. But that needs to be debated because the opposition Liberty Party has already filed a complaint and threatened to go to court over the reports of allegations.
Rodney Sears, managing editor of Front Page Africa, Liberia's leading online and print news magazine, was speaking with me from the capital, Monrovia. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barton in Washington. Today is Friday, October 13th. Daybreak Africa time is 16 minutes past the hour. Amid this week's announcement from the Congolese government that elections will not be held until at least 2019, there is still an ongoing crisis in the country's Kasai region, which began last year after the killing of a traditional leader. The Roman Catholic Church said the killing led to clashes in which more than 3,000 people died and more than 1.4 million people displaced. Tajudeen Oyawale, UNICEF's acting representative for the Democratic Republic of Congo, spoke to Ricky Stryak about how the crisis is improving, but still long-term obstacles remain.
The good news, however, is that now the security situation is improving and populations that have been displaced are now returning gradually, for sure, to meet a lot of challenges and a lot of issues that needs to be addressed immediately for children, their mothers, and also the community.
What are some of these issues that need to be addressed?
Interestingly, I was in the Kasai myself 2 weeks ago. And what I saw is a community of people that are resilient. For sure, like I said, when people reach their homes that have been destroyed or burnt, they return to health facilities that have either been destroyed or now become, you know, limited capacity. They return to schools that now lack the basic amenities. But the resilience I saw, which was very encouraging, is that now the health workers taking advantage in most parts that I was, that is relatively calm, taking advantage of the way people are on site, providing services, helping kids back in school. A major problem I still want to highlight that I think is perennial in terms of the impact is malnutrition. We still have a lot of children who are malnourished. And again, this has been an issue even before the crisis. This issue was compounded by the fact that people had to move out of the communities, out of their homes, and now that they are returning. In one of the health facilities that I was at critically, I saw clearly that in the peak of the crisis, which I would say would be between April, May, June, July, the number of children that show up in that facility was practically zero because people were out of the community. But as at the end of July, August, with, you know, increasing improvement in security situation, people started coming in, and more than 200 children, unfortunately, has been recorded with diarrhea diseases. And for sure, that has an implication for worsening their nutrition status.
Now that they are returning, but many of them have lost everything, what is the likelihood that they're returning to emergency situations?
Well, I think there are two things. Is that in this current context, you're right. People are returning, but returning to what? And I already gave a dossier of some of the challenges I saw in people. As a response and in partnership specifically with many partners, including the USAID and also the UK Aid, there are two innovative things that we are doing that is helping people to start again their life. Because I think we need to be clear, what we have to do initially is to help people to start again, and then they can pick up. One is that we have a cash program whereby we give an amount of money around $100 to households. The second is that together with the USAID, we have some what we call household items, and those items are now being given to families.
That was UNICEF acting DRC Representative Tajudeen Oyawale. He was speaking to Ricky Shryak from Dakar, Senegal. The International Organization for Migration says there has been a dramatic drop in the number of migrants from West Africa crossing the Sahel region into Niger on their way to Europe. Lisa Schlein reports from IOM headquarters in Geneva.
Migration officials attribute the drop in African migration to strong action by the government of Niger against human smuggling networks. The International Organization for Migration reports Niger has closed 3 of 6 transit houses in the town of Agadez, where migrants often stop on their journey. IOM Niger Chief of Mission Giuseppe Lopret says migrants used to wait in the houses for smugglers' vehicles to take them to Algeria or Libya.
Many vehicles have been withdrawn by the army along the migratory routes. Smugglers have been arrested. So all these created a context, sent across a message that transiting Agadez is not easy, it's not that easy.
Lopret tells VOA fewer migrants are arriving and staying in Agadez because of the difficulty in finding smugglers to take them to North Africa.
Last year, the first 6 months, we were estimating 5,000 to 7,000 migrants transiting per week going to Algeria or Libya. Right now, our numbers show that we have 5,500 migrants per month transiting, so there's definitely less migrants.
While the Agadez route is drying up, Loprat says, migration to Europe is not. He says smugglers are finding alternate, possibly more dangerous routes to transport their human cargo. He says Africans desperate to carve out a better life for themselves in Europe continue to risk their lives, making the perilous journey across the Sahel and eventually across the Sahara Desert. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
A group in Uganda has embarked on a tree planting program. Young Water Professionals Association, a group of young professionals that works to promote and conserve the environment, says it wants to plant at least 1 million trees within 1 year under a theme, Plant a Tree, Save the Future. Mugumi Davis-Rakarins reports from Kampala.
Speaking at the launch of the exercise in Kamuli District in eastern Uganda this Tuesday, Silver Mujisha, member of the association, said members would distribute seedlings and encourage people, mainly school children, to plant trees.
Each area must plant a minimum of 20,000 trees. I do believe that if we really had resilient effort in tree planting, we can even plant 2 million trees. So for us, the 20,000 is just a bare minimum for each area. So Bushenyi will plant minimum of 20,000, Arua 20,000, Tororo 20,000, like that. So if we do that, we should be able to make a big contribution.
Mujisha, who is also the managing director of National Water and Sewerage Corporation, a body responsible for distributing water in the country, said that trees are important in helping as water catchments, as well as purifying the water before it gets to water sources. Sam Cheptoe, the Minister for Water and Environment, welcomed the initiative. He says the government has distributed at least 10 million seedlings to citizens to plant trees across the country.
We have set a very ambitious target to restore the forest cover to 18% of the total land surface area by the year 2040. This is based on the fact that we are losing about 100,000 hectares of forest every year. And our efforts to plant trees is not matching the loss.
Minister Cheptoe, however, says his ministry does not have enough funds to execute its objectives of increasing trees. He says consequently the ministry cannot help curb down poor practices like illegal tree cutting for timber and charcoal. Speaking at the same event, Rebecca Kadaga, the Speaker of Parliament, challenged the group to expand the target. She says people should be sensitized to plant trees on every occasion.
I think we need to step up the campaign and make it more. Even to say one tree a month, why? You can plant 5, you can plant 10. Yes, we should use our social occasions to increase the tree cover. I said that, why don't we, for instance, when we have a marriage, 5 trees at the boy's home, 5 trees at the girl's side, 5 trees where they are going. What should be a problem with that? So on one occasion, we have 15 trees from one function.
Kadaga promised to use her position to ensure that money for wild conservation, in particular for forestry, is availed by the government. For VOA News, I am Mugume, Davis Rwakarinji in Kampala, Uganda.
It's 25 minutes past the hour. It's time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. And here is Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. Good morning to you, Samson.
Good Friday morning to you, James. We begin with the FIFA Under-17 World Cup holding in India, where Ghana have won Group A after thrashing host India 4-0 on Thursday. The Black Starlets finished level on 6 points with both Colombia and USA, but their handsome goal difference of +6 saw them top the log and claim automatic progression into the last 16. Ghana will now face a third-place team from either Group C or D in their last 16 clash on October the 18th. Another African representative, Mali, also advanced into the second round of the Under-17 World Cup after they defeated New Zealand 3-1. The result saw the Eagles finish in second place in Group B on 6 points, 3 adrift of leaders Paraguay, who easily defeated Turkey in the other pool match. Mali, as second place finishers in Group B, will now face the runners-up in Group F, one of England, Iraq, Mexico or Chile, in the last 16 clash on October the 17th. Guinea, the third African representatives, will lock horns with Germany in their third match later this afternoon after the Junior Elephants drew 2-2 with Costa Rica in their previous group match on Tuesday. The draw sees Guinea placed fourth on the Group C standings with 1 point. They are 2 points behind second place Germany with one game left. And now to the emergency committee meeting of the Confederation of African Football, CAF, the most powerful organ and the setup of the continental body. The body is expected to meet in Lagos, Nigeria on Saturday, and top on the agenda of the executive committee is the African Nations Championship, CHAN, originally scheduled for Kenya, but was later withdrawn due to lack of adequate preparation on the part of the East Africans. The meeting will also deliberate on recent happenings in the game in Africa, as well as CAF competitions next year. Nigeria's Super Eagles coach Geraint Rao has set his sight on qualifying for the 2019 African Cup of Nations AFCON finals. The German tactician recently guided the Super Eagles to the 2018 FIFA World Cup finals following a 1-0 win over Zambia in Uyo, Nigeria last weekend.
We have now in 5 games, 4 victories. I didn't believe that in this group, with the teams you know, we could make 4 victories and only 1 draw in Cameroon. So it's not finished, because the most difficult will begin to make a good World Cup and to prepare it.
Elsewhere, Egypt has started to implement a 5-referee system in its domestic football league following mounting criticism over the performance of referees. The new system, officially known as Additional Assistant Referees, AAR, was used in Egypt's Premier League matches for the first time on Wednesday. The AAR sees an additional assistant referee placed behind each goal to help the referee rule on contentious decisions during the game. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good weekend. We look forward to your report again on Monday morning. And that's it for this Friday, October 13th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending this week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as sports editor Samson Omale, along with our engineer Greg Burns, I am James Butte in Washington, wishing you in Africa a very, very good weekend.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, an in-depth discussion on the unpredictable nature of Africa's presidential politics. From Liberia's peaceful transition of power, to uncertainty in the Democratic Republic of Congo, to confusion in Kenya. A conversation on the continent's unsettling elections on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there. VOA. On weekends, tune into Nightline Africa at 1600 and 1800 UTC. and our 5-minute newscasts come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.